The middle length lumbrium. Identifying the karma, that is page number 119. Identifying the karma that is accumulated is its 2 points. Action that is intention and intended actions. The action that is intention, the mental factor that makes its concomitant might move and urges it towards object is mind of is action of mind. This is 3 points, the action that have actually been intended. This is according to the highest Madhyamika Prasangika's tradition, because here the karma is being explained as form. The actions of the body and speech that are motivated by that intention. The actions of body and speech are divided into revelatory and non-revelatory and posited as only having form by the Vaibhasikas. Master Vasubandhu refutes that and maintains that actions of body and speech are the intentions that operate together with the revelatory physical and verbal actions, whereby he explains both actions to be intention. In this regard, non-virtuous actions are non-meritorious actions. Meritorious actions are virtuous actions included in the level of desire realm. Immovable actions are contaminated virtuous actions included in the levels of form and formless realms. How karma is accumulated has 2 points, explaining who accumulates the karma to be thrown into cyclic existence. Once you have directly realized selflessness, you can still be reborn in cyclic existence under the power of karma and mental afflictions. However, you do not newly accumulate any throwing karma. Therefore, those who accumulate the karma to be thrown into cyclic existence are all ordinary beings, up to and including those abiding on the great level of highest mundane qualities on the Mahayana path of preparation. How karma is accumulated by that person. If with that basis you create non-virtuous actions by means of three doors, for instance killing, you will be accumulated non-meritorious karma. At the time of dying, the mind is very important. As we have said, what kind of karmas will be ripened depends on how you are familiar with that kind of karma. Even though for the whole life you might be performing only in the positive actions, but at the time of dying, if your mind went under the influence of attachment and desire and hatred and anger, and of course the self-attachment is always there. So if you have some companion at that time, it's very important if there is some companion at the time of dying that they remind you of the importance of thinking the virtues, like being faith, the devotion to the triple jewels, and also thinking about the qualities of the three jewels, and also if possible, recollecting the beneficial qualities of bodhicitta and compassion. And if one is able to generate a very genuine mind, which means for helping all the sentient beings, and followed by, if possible, a similar to bodhicitta. So if one is able to generate such kind of mind, there is no doubt that you will be reborn in a higher realm at the next life. So with the possession of these two minds, and if you are able to generate the secret virtuous mind through the tantra, then of course it will be considered very auspicious, as I've explained yesterday. So just being able to meditate or just being able to visualize is not also enough. So unless you have some understanding about the profound emptiness and the reality nature of the things, so therefore it's really very important that at the time of dying, like taking poa or migrating rituals at the time of dying, and even the person who dies, the important is the person who is dying should be able to generate a mind of virtues and the positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the companions and the people surrounding him can play some role, but the most important is the person himself or herself who's going to die, that the amount of the virtuous things that he's able to generate at that time. So for the whole life, even he may not be able to generate much kind of merits, but at the time of dying, if he is able to generate such virtuous things, then there is a great possibility that he will be reborn in the higher realm at the next life. Then even if you are able to do some special rituals at the time of dying, but if the families are something well-to-do family, and if they possess in very important rituals, but that on the 49th day, during the intermediate state of birth, during the 49 days, on the every week, if you are able to perform some rituals and all these things, it will be auspicious. But if all those kinds of rituals and prayers went into being the mind of eight worldly affairs out of fame and all these things, then it won't be any helpful. So it's better not to do such things. Then at the end of the death, so just there are some customs, like in order to, since they all have been mourning for so long, so in order as a meant for clearing that moan, so as a meant for enjoyment, so then if they do some sacrifices or kill animals and have some feasts, then it's really very wrong. Some party among the relatives, so there is some customs who does such things, so it's very, very wrong. Many Tibetans are said to be, there is a Tibetan customs who normally engages in such kind of practices which are not for good. We are on the page number 120. Even those who doesn't believe in religion and Dharma, but at the time of dying in hospitals or in medical cares, there might be some nurses or some medical staffs who take care of those persons. Even at that time, even though they may not have faith in the religion, but at that time, there might not be anything like virtues to remind them, since they do not believe in such things. But at the time of dying, if they could have a very calm mind, a very still mind, a very neutral, so that will be helpful. And if you follow any kind of traditions, if you follow any kind of religions and traditions, so that particular religion and tradition and the founder of the, if you could remember the founder, the masters and their graces, and how the God or the masters and the founders have been able to benefit you and all the sentient beings, and through their compassions and the love. So if one is able to remember or recollect those things at the time of dying, it will be also beneficial. So important is one should not generate mind being attached to one's relatives, and if the hostility minds and harmful intentions are generated at the time of dying, harmful intentions towards your enemies and attachment and desire to your relatives at the time of dying, it is very wrong. So one should strive as much as possible not to generate such kinds of mind at the time of dying. The page number 120. How you die, transmigrate, and take rebirth. This is 5 points. The conditions for death, it is 3 points. Death following the exhaustion of one's lifespan. To die due to the exhaustion of one's lifespan is to die when the time has come, when one's entire lifespan projected by previous karma is exhausted. Death following the exhaustion of one's merit. To die following the exhaustion of one's merit is the same as dying from a lack of basic requirements. To die due to dangers not being avoided is the same as the 9 causes and conditions for death, such as due to overeating, set forth in the sutras. The minds of death has 3 points. Both virtuous minds such as faith and non-virtuous minds such as attachment arise in the mind in dependence on one's own actions or being made recall them by others as long as gross compositional factors operate. To die with unspecific mind implies that one cannot recall virtuous or non-virtuous minds by oneself, nor was one reminded of them by others. This is 3 points. The appearance to the virtuous mind. For those who have created virtue, it is like going from thick darkness into light. At the time of death, various pleasant dream-like forms appear to them. They die happily, and even the interruption of life is of very minor severity. The appearance to a non-virtuous mind has 2 points. The actual appearance. For those who have created non-virtue, it is like going from light to thick darkness. At the time of death, various dream-like repulsive forms appear to them. Intense feelings of pain arise, and the interruption of life is also very severe. In all but places, except for the divine realms and hells, there is an interruption of life. In those who have an unspecific mind, the tear, the happiness and suffering that we explained ever do not arise. At the time of death, whichever mind, virtuous or non-virtuous, is most familiar becomes manifest, whereas other minds do not subsequently operate. If they are equally familiar, that which is recalled first will become manifest, whereas others do not subsequently operate. At the time when the mind moves through its subtle part, virtuous and non-virtuous minds come to a stop and become unspecified minds. At the time of death, as long as the state of unclear discrimination has not been reached, the attachment to a self that we have long been familiar with befalls all three. After that, under the influence of attachment to a self with a thought, I am becoming non-existent, delight in a body arises. It is the cause for the intermediate state to come about. With attachment to a self also arises. In stream enterers and once retainers, they investigate it with wisdom and abandon it rather than acquiescing in it. Just like, for instance, a strong person beating someone weak. In non-retainers, that attachment to a self does not arise. Page number 122, how the intermediate state is accomplished after death. This is 9 points. From where the bardo is accomplished. From the place the consciousness transfer from, as explained above, death and the intermediate state are accomplished without a break, just like the swing on the armature of a scale. The intermediate state being also is complete sense power such as eyes and has the aspect of the body of whatever migrating being it will be born as. As long as it does not take rebirth, its eye is unobstructive like the divine eye, and its body is also unobstructive as though possessed of magical powers. It is seen by intermediate state beings of similar type and by the flawless divine eye, arisen from meditation. Why it is set forth in the treasure of manifest knowledge that once the intermediate state of any migrating being has been accomplished, there is no diverting it into some other rebirth. The compendium of manifest knowledge also explains the reversals. Third, how the appearance of the intermediate existence appears to those who have created virtue and non-virtue. Fourth, how it sees, fifth, the color, then the distinction of whether there is or is not an intermediate state, how it travels the lifespan. Page number 123, how you take rebirth in the birth existence. In many levels, it is taught that when you are born in a womb, a mistaken perception arises with regard to the semen and blood of your father and mother. In that moment, like an illusion, you see your parents having intercourse even though they are not, and you develop attachment to them. However, the auto commentary on the treasury of manifest knowledge explains that you see your parents actually having intercourse. Furthermore, if you are born as a female, you want to be rid of the woman, become attached to the man and want to sleep with him. If you are born as a male, you want to get rid of the man, become attached to the woman and want to sleep with her. Once this kind of desire has arisen, the closer you approach, other body parts of that man and woman no longer appear and you only see the male and female sexual characteristics. Getting angry at that, the intermediate existence being dies, transfers and is being reborn. Furthermore, when there is a situation of intense attachment between father and mother, at the very end, thick fluid emerges. After that, two drops of semen and blood doubtlessly emerge from the two. Once the two are mixed in the birth place of the mother, they turn into something like, for instance, boiled milk, which has cooled down and set. At the same time, the intermediate existence terminates. By the power of consciousness, that transmigrates the subtle parts of the great elements of the sense powers, which are other than that mixture, and the combination of semen and blood that echoes with that mixture arises at other along with the sense powers. The consciousness that enters at that time is posited as the basis of all by those who accepted the basis of all. Those who do not accept a basis of all assert that it is the mental consciousness that transmigrates. If it has not desired to go to a birthplace, the intermediate state being will not go there, and if it has not gone there, it will not be born there. Therefore, the intermediate state being of someone possessing non-vows who created and accumulate an action for rebirth in hell, such as killing sheep or treating poultry or pigs and the like, ceases in a dream. She even so far at this birthplace and registers there with the delight of previous familiarity. And in the great stages of path to enlightenment, the 12 factors of dependent arising. Reflection from the viewpoint of the 12 dependent arising, the second part of the method for developing the mind intent of liberation. As for the general dependent arising, all the four Buddhist schools of thoughts accept it. So actually it's kind of basis for the dependent origination. The second part of the method for developing the mind intent or liberation is to reflect on the 12 aspects of dependent arising. This topic is 4 parts, the division into 12 factors. The 12 factors of dependent arising are ignorance in the treasury of knowledge. Ignorance is like animosity and falsehood. Animosity and the falsehood refer neither to the absence of friendship and truth, nor to what is different from these two, but rather to the classes of phenomena. This is in common to all the four schools of Buddhism. Likewise, ignorance also refers neither to the absence of that cognition, which is the remedy for ignorance, nor to what is other than this, but to the classes of phenomena that are directly antithetical to and incompatible with cognition. Regarding this, the great scholar Dharmakriti says that here the remedy cognition is the cognition of the real, the meaning of the selflessness of the persons. Therefore, its antithesis is a refining view of the perishing aggregates, the conception of a self in persons, along with this interpretation, which is ignorance as a misapprehension of the meaning of reality. There is a second view held by the scholar Asanga and his brother Vasubandhu, who assert that ignorance is merely confusion about the meaning of reality. In brief, they say that ignorance is a mind that does not know its object, but also that it's not a misconception. Among the 12 dependent arising, the first ignorance means to the ignorance towards the reality nature of all the phenomena. And it is the causes of, it is the main causes which cast us all to the great ocean of samsara. However, Dharmakriti on one hand and Asanga and Vasubandhu on the other are alike in asserting that wisdom that knows selflessness is the principal remedy for ignorance. Due to the ignorance, we accumulated negative karmas. And with the effect of negative karmas, including negative karmas relating to physical and speech, For example, in the refer to the physical and speech non-virtuous actions, when the action is completed, from the time of completing the actual action and from the time of reaping the results, the duration gap is very long. As it is stated in the highest Mahayana school about the disintegration of the karma. Disintegration of the karma is very important. So disintegration itself is being asserted as impermanence, but the lower skills refer to the disintegration of the phenomenon as something permanent. So in that sense, it's very difficult to explain the, how the karmic results in the ripening and how it causes us to rebound in the samsaric realms. But when you, when a newcomer is being planted, the seed of the karma is being planted on the consciousness mind. So again, in this, in the lower skills, where they assert that the karmic seed is being planted on the consciousness at the same time, so when the consciousness is being referred to as the self itself, but then again from the highest Madhyamika schools, the self itself is not something which we can find if we analyze further. So when that kind of self is being asserted as the consciousness, then here we can see a kind of contradictory. And among the consciousness also, there is the consciousness referred to at the cause level and at the result level. At the result level is the one where the cause, the seed of the consciousness is being, the seed of the karma is being planted on the consciousness, and at the time of ripening it, it the seed that itself being ripens in the form of karma, and through it, the, with the help of desire, so we are reborn. But eventually, even though they say that the seed of the karma is being planted on the consciousness, but if you examine the reality nature of the consciousness and also the seed, there is nothing to find. And all according to the Madhyamika Prasangika, it's only the mere eye where all the seeds of the karmics, whether it's virtuous or non-virtuous, are being planted. When page number 316, the compositional activity. Compositional activity is karma. There are two kinds of karma. Non-meritorious karma, which impels miserable rebirths, and meritorious karma, which impels happy rebirths. The latter is further divided into two types, meritorious karma, which impels happy rebirths into the desired realm, and invariable karma, which impels happy rebirths into higher realms. Third consciousness. The order of the 12 Tibetan arising, as it is written in the text, the 10th Tibetan arising, the Tibetan arising of samsara, or the cycle of existence, the craving dependent arising, and the ninth level there is the grasping dependent arising, and then the potential existence. But according to the tantra, the very subtle mind difference between the wind and the mind, we have to we have to calculate, or we have to establish it as a form. But anyhow, the mental, the form of the mind is something which is always existing there. There might be differences with the subtlety of the mind's existence, but there is, the mind itself is always there. Yes. We're at page number 317, six sources. The name and the form Tibetan arisings are actually already there since your birth, but from there, gradually the six sources come into being. If you are born from a womb, four sources, the eyes, ears, nose, and the tongue are formed through the further development of name and the oblong mass of fertilizing womb into which consciousness initially enters. The physical and mental sources, however, exist from the time of fertilized ovum, the time of name and form. If you are born spontaneously, there are no such stages, since your sources form simultaneously with your entering rebirth. However, for those born from eggs or for those born from moisture, the explanation is similar to the explanation of those born from a womb. With the exception of the word womb, this is explained in the levels of yoga deeds. So after one is after the development of the six sources, then gradually the faculties of the eye, and from it the eye consciousness come into being. And from it, with the generation of all these sense faculties, so generally the grasping arises from it. With the generation of all these faculties, then we tend to experience the blessings of neutral, happy, and non-happy. If you are, this being the case, once name and form are established, you have an actual body. When the six sources are established, so at that time one develops the attachment towards the pleasant feelings and develops a kind of desire, not desire which wish not to being separated from the pleasant feelings. The experience has been created because the particulars of the body are formed. The five physical sources do not exist in the formless realm. Contact. When sensory objects, sensory faculty, and consciousness come together, you distinguish three types of objects: attractive, unattractive, and neutral. And from here, the objects to from which the pleasant, the feelings of pleasant and unpleasant and the neutral come into arise. Corresponding to the context discrimination of three types of objects, there occur three sorts of feelings: pleasant, painful, and neutral. Craving, this means both craving not to be separated from pleasant feelings and craving a separation from painful feelings. The statement in a sutra that craving is caused by feeling means that feelings accompanied by ignorance cause craving. When there is no ignorance, craving does not occur even if feelings are present. Grasping refers to yearning after an attachment to four types of objects: holding on to what you want, yearning after an attachment to the sensuous forms and sounds, for example, to bad views, to ethical discipline associated with bad views and bad contact, and to the view of perishing aggregates. Holding on to views, holding on to ethical discipline and contact, and holding on to assertions that there is a self. Potential existence. In the past, compositional activity infused in your consciousness with a talent propensity that, when nurtured by craving and grasping, become empowered to bring forth a subsequent existence. Existence is a case of calling a cause by name of its effects. Birth refers to consciousness initially entering one or another of the four types of rebirth. Aging is a maturation and transformation of the mental and physical aggregates. Death is the casting aside of aggregates continuum. Abbreviated classification of the factors, the component of knowledge. What sort of categories do you obtain by abbreviating the factors? There are four types: the projecting factors, the projected factors, the actualizing factors, and the actualized factors. So, after you have accumulated the karma to be reborn in a kind of realms, and with the help of the 10th Tibetan arising when it is nurtured, then with that karma, with the help of desire, the causes and the conditions for taking rebirth comes into being. Well, then do the two types of causality, one with respect to projection and other with respect to actualization, demonstrate one instance of causality wherein one person takes rebirth, or do they demonstrate two instances? If the former, it will be incorrect to claim that the actualizing factors, craving and so on, occur after the establishment of the group of factors beginning with resultant period consciousness and ending with feeling. If the latter, there will be no ignorance, compositional activity, or casual period consciousness. In the later cycle of causality and no craving, grasping or existence in the former cycle of causality, there is no such fault because whatever is projected by the projecting causes must be created by the actualizing causes. So, in order to complete the 12 Tibetan arising link at one time, so at least two lifespan has to be go through. So for example, in one life, if one is able to have the Tibetan arising of the name and the sources, and if also the if we're able to have the karmic, the nurturing karmics, the 8 and 9 Tibetan arising. So it, there is a possibility that even at the next life, you will, that same karma will be ripened, being reborn in another life. So in that case, the whole 12 Tibetan links are being realized or actualized in two lifespan. But for the lengthy one, we take, normally it takes three lifespans. So the person itself is being designated or being named based on the consciousness and mind. And even for the form and physical things, there is also the parts where the parts through which the collection of which forms the physical, and even for the mind, there are parts through the timings, the early, the causes and the results. Well then, what is the point of presenting two cycles of causality? Such a presentation demonstrates that characteristics of a true sufferings that are effects of projection differ from those that are effects of actualization. The former are dormant at the time of projection. Since they have not actually been established, they will only become suffering in future. However, the later are a situation in which the suffering has been actualized and hence are suffering in this lifetime. Moreover, the two cycles of cause and effect were presented for the sake of demonstrating that the effect taking rebirth has two causes, projecting causes and causes that actualize what has been projected. The levels of yogi districts the reason for this, given that the factors of birth and aching and death and the group of factors beginning with the resultant period consciousness and ending with the feeling are phenomena with shared characteristics. Why they have been taught to be of two types, this is done in order to demonstrate the different characteristics of things that bring suffering and in order to demonstrate the distinction between projection and actualization. And also among the factors, how many are both included within true sufferings and become sufferings in this lifetime? There are two, birth and aching and death. How many are just included within true sufferings and will only become sufferings in the future? The ones that are dormant, the group of factors beginning with consciousness and ending with feelings. Therefore, the two factors of craving, which is an actualizing factors, and feeling, which gives rise to this craving, are not in the same sequence of dependent arising. The feeling that gives rise to craving is an effect of some other sequence of dependent arising. Projecting and being projected should be understood by way of four considerations. In page number 322, the 12 factors, moreover, are subsumed under three parts, those of affliction, karma, and sufferings. As the wise Nagarjuna said, the first, the 8 and the 9 are afflictions, the second and 10 are karma, the remaining 7 are sufferings. The rice seedling sutra mentions four causes which subsume the 12 factors of dependent arising. It explains that when the seeds of consciousness sown in the field of karma by ignorance are subsequently moistened by water of craving, they give rise to the sprout of name and form in the murderer's womb. The number of lifetimes required to complete all 12 factors. While it is possible for countless eons to go by between the projecting and the projected factors, it is also possible for the projected factors to be actualized in the very next lifetime with no intervening lifetime. Since the actualizing factors and the actualized factors occur without an intervening lifetime, it is possible at the shortest to complete all the factors in two lifetimes. You might, for example, in a lifetime such as this one, first accumulate karma that results in rebirth as a deity as well as the subsequent experience of a deity's life and resources. When this occurs, 2.5 factors, ignorance, compositional activity, and consciousness of the causal period, as well as craving, grasping, and existence, are completed in this lifetime. In the subsequent lifetime, the 4.5 projected factors and the 2 actualized factors will be completed. Even at the longest, completion of all 12 factors will be delayed no longer than 3 lifetimes. For the actualizer, the 2 actualized factors and the 3 projecting factors all require their own lifetimes, while the projecting factors. It is stated in cited by the Asanga, where he has stated the 12 dependent arising and the result of the denification of self is also projected as something which depends on the other, which arises out of dependent arising, and refuting the self as something which is self-sustained or self-sufficient. So the self is also projected as something which depends on the body and the parts. And the self does not exist as something different from the body and the parts. Furthermore, though many lifetimes may intervene between 323, page number, the projectors and the actualizers, they are not lifetimes of their own particular cycle of dependent arising, but are rather lifetimes of other cycles of dependent arising. Among these calculations of 2 or 3 lifetimes, the lifetimes of intermediate state had not reckoned separately. Thus, even during the lifetime in which the resultant factors have been actualized, there is no self that is a person who accumulates karma or experiences its results. Rather, as previously explained, there are resultant factors which are themselves merely phenomena arising from casual factors which are themselves merely phenomena. Not understanding this process of cyclic existence and being confused about it, you posit a self, desiring yourself to be happy. You physically, verbally, and mentally engage in virtue and non-virtue for that purpose, whereby you again feel the process of cyclic existence. Therefore, the 2 karmic factors arise from the 3 afflicted factors, and from them the 7 suffering factors arise. Afflictions arise again out of the 7 sufferings, and as before, you pass through cyclic existence. Thus, the wheel of existence turns without interruption. The Master Nagarjuna says in his heart of dependent arising, from the 3 arise the 2, from the 2 arise the 7, and again from the 7 arise the 3. The wheel of existence itself repeatedly turns. When you reflect on your wandering in such a way through cyclic existence, the 12 factors of dependent arising are best method for generating disenchantment with cyclic existence. Page number 324, how their significance is summarized. You should understand well, as explained above, how cyclic existence, the acute grace of suffering is being formed through the power of its origin, karma and the afflictions, and in particular, how the wheel of existence turns in the context of the 12 factors. Understanding this and become familiar with it destroys the unbearable gloom of confusion, the root of all problems. It eradicates all mistaken views holding external and internal compositional activities to arise causelessly or from incompatible causes. It increases the precious well of the treasure of Concord's teachings, and it is what motivates you toward the path of liberation through exact knowledge of the characteristics of the cyclic existence and intense disenchantment with them. It is the best means for activating the latent propensities by which you will attain the sublime state of a noble being. Thus, the Tantra requested by Sabahu says the path of Tibetan arising destroys ignorance. The Rice Seedling Sutra says that when you understand Tibetan arising well, you put an end to all bad views that takes as their object the beginning, the end, or the pleasant. Master Nagarjuna said that Tibetan arising is the profound treasure in the soul of concrete speech. The basis of discipline states that it was the custom of the excellent pair, Shariputra and the Modalgayana, occasionally to travel among the five kinds of beings. As normally we draw the 12 life cycles wheel outside our temple, so it is even stated in the Vinaya text. Page number 225, because there will not be always be teachers like this excellent pair making a painting in the gatehouse of a five-part wheel of cyclic existence, around the circumference of which are the 12 Tibetan arising at both forward and reverse progression. The wheel of existence was then drawn. On another occasion, a painting of Buddha was to be sent to King Uddrayana. So with that, a relativity nature of cause and effect comes into our mind. As Lama Tsongkhapa stated, that whatever is depend on cause and effect, and it itself is empty of being inherent existence. And since it depends on cause and effect, therefore Nagarjuna, if all the phenomena are existing by naturally, and if you perceive in this way, in that case, all the matters and the physical things you will have to see as without causes. If the results are being happened without any causes, and if the result happens independently, so therefore the results or the effects doesn't arise without dependence or relate to the cause. So therefore, when the results are in dependence with the cause, therefore it comes into our mind the relativity nature of the cause and effect. But again, and if you think about it in perspective of your own experience, then as stated by Nagarjuna, that there is no self. The self is neither the five elements from the water, earth, and so on, then where is the self? After that, he doesn't say that there is no self, but then he says the self is something which is a compositional of all the elements. And also stated in the fundamental to the wisdoms, whatever arises out of dependent origination is by themselves are by nature empty. So therefore, the Tibetan origination based on cause and effect is something very important, and we have to generate a conviction about that. But generally, actually, it's quite easy, and even the animals, sometimes they have a kind of conviction about this Tibetan arising natures. For the birds, the mother, how they feed their little offsprings, and also how they build up their nest, and the timing also to feed their children during the time where there are a lot of insects and worms. So they also knows that the result is in relation to the cause. So for us, the result and the effect, we have to look from a larger perspective. Like whatever happens at the later part of our life, the causes causes already planted at the earlier part of your life. So whatever happens from a bigger perspective, like whatever happens in another life, the past life, has the effect being experienced in this life. So therefore, the relativity nature of dependent origination is being explained here. So with that, having a deep conviction and understanding about the relativity to the cause and effect of dependent origination, we will gain the higher levels of arahat. On the page number 326, the attitude of a person of medium capacity. The measure of the determination to be free, you must understand in detail the characteristics of cyclic existence, both by way of suffering and its origin and by way of 12 factors of dependent arising. Once you understand these characteristics, you will develop a desire to abandon and to quell suffering and its origin. Again, at this point, although you may have a simple determination to be free, you should not be satisfied merely with this. Hence, Chandrakriti's commentary on the 60 stanzas of reasoning says, once we are certain that living in the three levels of cyclic existence, impermanence, blazing fire is like entering a burning house, we want to escape it. As cited previously, just as when a chance arises for prisoners to flee from prison, develop an attitude about cyclic existence like those who feel aversion for the confinement in the blazing houses or a prison and want to escape, then progressively increase this feeling of aversion and desire to escape. Sharava described a superficial determination to be free as being like when you pour powder into inferior beer. As it is stated that others' sake is being referred to as the liberation to be attained by other. So if one does not generate the mind of mind that wishes to benefit other sentient beings, then how can we lead the other sentient beings to the nirvana? Thus, you will not be able to develop either the compassion that cannot bear to see the sufferings of living beings in cyclic existence or the uncontrived spirit of unsurpassed enlightenment that instills you with strength. Hence, your understanding of the mind will also be merely intellectual. Therefore, you must practice these teachings for the person of medium capacity and regard them as crucial instructions. Dispelling misconceptions. Although it is appropriate in the Hinayana to cultivate disenchantment with cyclic existence, it is inappropriate for bodhisattvas, for if bodhisattvas fail to cultivate intense disgust and disenchantment with the cyclic existence, they will be like the Saravakas and fall into the extreme of fees, having become displeased with their involvement in cyclic existence. As the Sutra of showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret states, bodhisattvas thinking of the maturation of living beings view cyclic existence as beneficial. Accordingly, they do not view great nirvana as beneficial to the maturation of beings. And further, when bodhisattvas to fear involvement in cyclic existence, they will fall into a destitute place. And also Bhagavan varies the Saravakas free involvement in cyclic existence, bodhisattvas voluntarily take innumerable births in cyclic existence. This is a great error that misconstructs the sutra's meaning, for the sutra passage that says, thus the bodhisattvas should not be become disenchanted with the cyclic existence, does not teach bodhisattvas not to be disgusted with the sufferings of birth, aching, illness, death, and so on, the result of our wandering through cyclic existence under the influence of our karma and afflictions. Rather, this sutra teaches joyous perseverance. In order to train in the bodhisattva's activities for the sake of others until the end of cyclic existence, bodhisattvas must put on armor. Once they do this, even if all the sufferings of all beings were collected and bodhisattvas constantly experience them mentally and physically, they will still persevere joyously delighting in the magnificent deeds that have others without becoming disenchanted with or frightened by suffering. Thus, the Buddha said that bodhisattvas must not be disenchanted with the cyclic existence. The Master Chandrakriti says, Bodhisattvas who take on the sufferings of all beings moment by moment until the end of cyclic existence do not fear harm to their bodies or mind. Bodhisattvas who take on the sufferings of all beings simultaneously until the end of cyclic existence delight in this activity. Each instant of such joyous perseverance acts as the cause which effect produces boundless collections of wealth, bringing omniscience to all beings. Once Bodhisattvas understand this, it is appropriate for them to take hundreds of rebirths. In order to emphasize this point, Chandrakriti then cites the aforementioned sutra passage from the Sutra of Showing the Tathagata's Inconceivable Secret. This same sutra states that cyclic existence should be viewed as beneficial because bodhisattvas gain happiness proportionate to the effort they make when they strive for the welfare of living beings. Hence, the Buddha said that not being disenchanted with cyclic existence means not being disenchanted with accomplishing the good of living beings in cyclic existence as well as enjoying this activity. The final barrier of 329, failing to make this distinction leads to qualms like the above. The Bodhisattva level says if the proponents of such a position have taken the vows of Bodhisattva, then they have committed a misdeed permitted with afflictions. However, fearing too many words, will not quote the passage in full. Hence, it is amazing that bodhisattvas see the defects of cyclic existence and are thoroughly disgusted, yet do not give up their vow because they are motivated by great compassion. If those who see the wonders of cyclic existence as like a celestial mansion, without reducing their craving even as slightest, claim to be serving others, how could their unwillingness to abandon cyclic existence please the wise? The bodhisattvas, with a wish and intention to benefit the inconceivable numbers of sentient beings, and with that wish, they are always reborn in the samsara. Since bodhisattvas see the faults of cyclic existence, they do not remain here. Because they care for others, they do not remain in nirvana. In order to fulfill the needs of others, they resolve to remain in cyclic existence. Once you see that limitless sufferings of all living beings, such as the 110 sufferings explained in the bodhisattva levels, you allow this to be the cause for great compassion. At this time, when you cultivate the heart that is a forceful and enduring inability to withstand the sight of other sufferings, it will be contradictory to be not even slightly disenchanted with cyclic existence. The theme of Aryadeva's 400 stanzas is the stretches of the path upon which bodhisattvas develop great revolution for cyclic existence, and then saving living beings and their close relatives enter the ocean of cyclic existence for their sake. In his commentary on that book, the great master Chandrakriti clarified this. Due to the Buddha's explanation of the faults of cyclic existence, his disciples learn to fear it and desire freedom from it. The Bhagavan said the following so that they will develop a strong connection to the Mahayana. O monks, among all who have passed through cyclic existence for a long time, there is not one being among all the various types of living beings who has not been like a father, mother, son, daughter, relative, or step relation to you. And further, by understanding the words of Bhagavan, bodhisattvas are able to live into the ocean of cyclic existence. Page number 331. Therefore, you should completely give all agitation and even cultivate the idea that rulers of kingdoms suffer, ascertaining the nature of path leading to liberation. Exhort yourself and meditate on the faults of cyclic existence. As Sri Jagan Mitrananda says, although we have sunk into the mist of cyclic existence, an ocean of suffering with neither bottom nor shore, we are not disenchanted, we have no fear, we are pleased and excited. What is going on in our minds? Although we have entered a fire constantly blazing with problems, poverty, hardship in acquiring food and shelter, effort in giving, and finally loss, as well as separation, illness, and aching, we boast of happiness. This seems insane. And alas, the worldly have eyes yet are blind. Although you see the obvious, you do not think about it at all. Has your mind become hardened? Consequently, as Goyadatta's edifying tale of the seven maidens says, we see the things of the world as wavering images of the moon and water. We see attachment as shadow of fruits and coils of angry snakes. We see these beings to be blessed with flames of suffering. We therefore go to the cremation grounds, oaking, delighting in the determination to be free. Thus, when you see that cyclic existence, environments, and being is like a moon and water that is stirred by the wind, impermanent, disintegrating, not resting even for an instant, that sensory objects, like shadows of the bodies of poisonous snakes, hold little value but great danger, and that five types of beings are scorched by blazing fires of three sufferings, and then you give rise to a disposition like that of northern children, a disposition that has completely turned away from attachment to cyclic existence. When this happens, there occurs the determination to be free, along with the delights and liberation. The expression northern children is to be understood as follows. In the north, roasted barley flour is scarce, and consequently the inhabitants eat small amounts of turnips. Once there is small children there who, being hungry and wishing to eat roasted barley flour, ask their mother for food. Since she had no roasted barley flour, she offered them fresh turnip, which they refused. Then she offered them dry turnips, but they did not want it either, so she then gave them cooked turnip. But they turned this down as well. Finally, she offered them frozen cooked turnip, whereupon they turned away with a great feeling of nausea, exclaiming, "Everything is turnips." Likewise, with respect to whatever worldly happiness is seen, heard, or remembered, you must, as the Kadamba teacher have said, generate the same feeling, thinking, "This is the world. This is the world. Everything is suffering, and I want nothing to do with it." In this way, by contemplating your previous beginningless wanderings through the cyclic existence, you become disenchanted and revolted. And by contemplating the necessity of continuing to wander here indefinitely, you give rise to fear and anxiety. With a determination that transcends mere words, you must, as Nagarjuna's friend Leather says, stop your birth in cyclic existence, the root of all harm. Cyclic existence is like dead birth, whether in the lands of deities and humans, hell beings, hungry ghosts, or animals, is not auspicious. Understand that birth is a vessel of much harm. What is more, you must eliminate both causes of birth and cyclic existence, karma and affliction, since between these two, if you have no afflictions, you will not take birth, no matter how much karma you have. Hence, you should destroy the afflictions. In general, even though you are a lame people, but still you have the potential to attain liberation. If one is able to practice as stated by Kyabje Pabongar Rinpoche, even if you stay in a home, as a layman, you have the ability to attain liberations. If you are not able to practice, then even if you are a monk, you will still cannot attain the liberation. Ascertaining the nature of birth leading to liberation has two parts: the kind of life through which you hold cyclic existence, the kind of birth you cultivate to hold cyclic existence. The kind of life through which you hold cyclic existence, the friendly letter, to be reborn with wrong views or without a conqueror's word, or as an animal, a hungry ghost, a hell being, an uncultured person in a border region, a stupid and mute person, or a deity of long life, is to be afflicted by one of the eight faults that are conditions which lack leisure. After you have attained leisure, which is freedom from these rebirths, strive to end birth. It is not possible to stop birth in cyclic existence if you have not time. Therefore, once you have obtained a life of leisure and opportunity, you must stop it. I have already explained this. The great yogi Chanchu Rinchen said, "Now is the time to make ourselves different from domestic animals." Also, Buddha said, the theist, non-Buddhist, and even some Hindu lamas or Hindu practitioners, a few have a lot of luxuries, but most of them are really live a very ascetic life, very austerity measures, and also very simple life. But sometimes in our Tibetan monasteries, we see a kind of a great luxury with so many material development. Even I have seen some Christian churches where they really stay like a retreat. It was once, perhaps I think it was in France, where I happened to be in one Christian monastery, and they bring me around to see the compounds around the monastery, and I saw a Christian monk, and he was really sitting in a very austerity measures without anything except he has a tape recorder on his time. Then I touched the tape recorder, and the father told me, please don't touch it, because he doesn't have anything else, since he only has one tape recorder. That is something which he really cares about. So he just asked me not to touch that. So therefore, and sometimes I tell them, you're all really very contented and satisfied, not craving for too much, and it's very good. Sometimes we Buddhist monks have a lot of luxuries. Even during the times of Lord Buddha, there are instances and stories where the bhikshus stay in the great gardens. And I've seen I'm not remembering the name now. The name of the Patiali professor? Professor Joshi. There was a book written by him. He is no more now. I normally tell this. In India, the reasons for declining the Buddhism in India has three reasons. One reason is that the monks living in monastery have craving for luxuries and wealth, and many monks happen to be very rich and wealthy. And I think it's something like that. It even evident in here, even though they stay in the monastery, but they do all the kinds of things that they have to do with their families, even helping with the family's business and lending and borrowing and all the monies and so on. So therefore, monks even staying in a monastery become very wealthy and rich, so the general public has a very bad impression about these monks. And second thing is due to the tantric, with the tantric and they have not been able to practice it well, and without maintaining the real measures that need to be taken, and with all the kinds of practices which the normal people does not like. And the third thing is the great noble persons and like the kingdoms, they came to the monasteries and come to do serving and offerings. And gradually, they lose the interest and the devotion to Buddha Dharma, and because they've been doing more service for the non-Buddhist traditions. So therefore, it is very important for us to be careful, claiming ourselves to be a practitioner of tantric, but in reality, if you are not able to maintain the necessary steps, then it is very dangerous. I used to tell, sometimes many of you might not heard, and once I was in America, and one man came to me and he was very angry. And he says that he has lost the faith in Tibetan Buddhism. The reason was that his wife was being snatched by a Tibetan monk. So he was very angry. So with the name of tantric in place and saying, claiming as kantramas, the female deities, and engaging in indulging in negativities and mischaracters. And also, we say that drinking of wine and eating meat is sometimes as a means of practice of tantric. But in reality, if you are able to, if you want to really practice this kind of converting the meat into taste real taste according to Tantra, then you should also able to taste the five nectaries. And if you're able to taste the five nectaries and five eatables, including the feces and urines, also in the same way, then of course you can do it. But whatever your activities and your deeds are very normal and very ordinary, but if you take the tantric in your mouth, then it is very bad. So this is something we all have to take care of. But for the general monks, the source of their living, I've seen in Tibet, some monks really staying very poorly. But here we have the monk's kitchen where everything is being offered by the monks, and so monks have a better condition and facilities to strive harder in their studies and practices. So they have to make, you all have to make sure that you doesn't go under the distraction of listening to tantric odors and watching movies. And with as a source of distraction, and if you tend to watch movies, different kinds of movies, then it all becomes a source of source of developing more afflicted emotions. So you all have to be very careful about this. I think a few years back in Tawang, in Arunachal Pradesh, in Tawang Monastery, I heard that there are many monks who drink wines and alcohols. Then I just jokingly told them. And recently, with the increasing number of monks, so we also with many donations receiving through the donors, and they want to build a temple and do a lot of luxurious things. And I'm telling you, since you have a big prayer hall and a lot of luxury things, and I wanted to tell you secretly that in the monks who are staying in such big temples, and if they do not practice or study well, then the temple may be very big, but we feel ashamed. If the monks staying inside the temple really study very hard, because these such kinds of huge temples and the constructions have to be a source of real practice and meditations. So if that doesn't become, then if this becomes a source of other things, then it's very bad. We have already went under such a severe suffering and hardships in the past, but now when everything is okay with that, all the kind of luxuries and these constructions and everything, so if it becomes a source of all these things, then we will be really face another problem. Furthermore, since living, page number 336, since living in a household is at odds with religion, it is difficult to practice religion there. The same text states, if you do the business of households, it is unfeasible to refrain from speaking falsely, as it is unfeasible not to punish others who do wrong. If you practice religion, household pursuits suffer. If you attend to the household, how can you practice religion? Religious activity is peaceful, a householder's aims are achieved through rootlessness. Therefore, because of the flaw of being at odds with religion, who desiring to have themselves, will live in household. Deep blessing. This is the praise for Jamjin Chuje, the founder of Sera Monastic University.
We're on page number 337. The first paragraph after the four-line quotation, which says, "A household is a nest of vipers such as arrogance, pride, and delusion. It destroys tranquility and the place of happiness, and is a place of many unbearable sufferings. Who would stay in a place so similar to a snake pit? Contemplate again and again the defects of a dwelling in a household and aspire to the life of a renunciate." So Chamjin Churchill, who founded this Sera Monastery. In the past, he used to have a black hat, but these days he's depicted wearing yellow hat. So the Chinese emperor at that time had some reason perhaps to offer a new special hat to him. So Chamjin Churchill, a black hat. So Chamjin Churchill used to be, because Chamjin Churchill used to be in the kitchen of the Master Tsongkhapa. So because of that, he may be touching the pots and things, and therefore his hand may be becoming soiled with coal and dirt, and maybe touching his bite. When he touched his hat, it would, of course, be soiled with the suit and everything, and therefore it would turn rather black. So Jamyang Churjin, Jamyang Churjin Toshipal Denpa, who founded Drepung Monastery, and Chamjin Churjin, the founder of Sera, were great masters. They didn't have their own labrang or private estates. They lived as simple monks and as disciples of Tsongkhapa. And also, at the behest of Tsongkhapa, they built these monasteries, Sera and Drepung, and then Lama Tsongkhapa himself founded the garden. And so these great monastic institutions have turned as great academic learning centers over the last many centuries. And then we have other sister monasteries of these great monastic institutions that spread in other parts of Tibet, in the Kham and Amdo regions. So in the past, we tried to Geluk Mother Monastery, apart from the three seats of learning, Sera, Drepung, and Garden. I said at that time, it's very difficult. Jamyang Churje and Chamjin Churje had it would be very difficult to find people who have a greater amount of virtues than these two masters. But then we have to, of course, first put effort in developing these monasteries that already were in existence, I said. And then after making these monasteries, Sera and Garden Drepung, as successful monasteries, then maybe we can start another institution as a support to this. Otherwise, Ling Rinpoche, I also told Ling Rinpoche about this. And also, so the founder of Gyudi Monastery, Gunga Thundrup, Gyuchin Gunga Thundrup. So the Tantric people in Gyutu should not be a disgrace to Gyuchin Gunga Thundrup, but think that they are his followers and accordingly practice the Dharma well by cultivating. So these great masters, Gyuchin Gunga Thundrup and so forth, have founded these monasteries, Tantric monasteries, after having cultivated bodhicitta and the understanding of emptiness within themselves and experienced them and had actually accumulated so much merit, and you are the followers of these, and therefore it's very important for you to be able to differentiate between what is right and wrong and practice what is right correctly. So it says to aspire to the life of renunciate, page 337. In reference to this, the renunciates are content with alms, simple religious robes, and alms bowls. And alms bowls, in solitude they remove their afflictions and aspire to become objects of others' veneration, as it says in Guhyadatta's edifying tales of the seven maidens. When will we thus come to shave our head, don clothes from the garbage, and seek solitude, gazing ahead only a yoke's length? When will we, blameless, take in our hands earthen alms bowls, and from household to household partake of alms? So renunciates are content with the meager food and drink, and with clothes heavy with frost, from sleeping without a roof over their heads in bedding made of grass. So these are how hermits live in mountains. So they aspire to sleep in their place, on soft grass in front of a tree, nurtured by the happiness and joy of the teaching. And Bodhava says, and then there's there are two verses from Edifying the Tale of Seven Maidens. Bodhava said, the very night after snow fell on the roof of the house, I became happy because something like this. So this place is called Pembo Kartok. So the term snow is actually snow falling. Seems like Kartok. I became happy because something like this occurred in the edifying tale of seven maidens. I want nothing other than to practice in this way. So we had an example of such a person who lived under trees without any roof. So, which is something gratifying. Renunciates aspire to dwell in meadow or on the bank of a river, reflecting on the similarity between their own bodies and lives, and the arising and disintegration of waves. They aspire to stop, by means of discerning wisdom, the conception of self, root of cyclic existence, and creator of all bad views. They aspire to overcome their obsession with the pleasures of cyclic existence and reflect on animate and inanimate world as being like a magician's illusions. As it is said in the edifying tale of the seven maidens, when dwelling on the river bank or in a meadow, will we come to see again and again that the rising and falling of waves and the world of this life are similar, and so forth. All of these persons lived as renunciates while at the same time aspiring to these higher achievements. As Chekhova said, if there is someone living as a sage in the valley of the ascetics, then the father has fundamentally raised his child well. Sharava said, when householders are very busy, you monks should dress nicely and visit them. They will then think, oh, the life of the renunciate is wonderful. This establishing them a latent predisposition for a future life as a renunciate. Also, the questions of a householder, Ugra Sutra, says that bodhisattvas who dwell in the household should aspire in this way. And so this passage states, that such bodhisattvas who should principally aspire to full ordination. Furthermore, the ornament for Mahayana Sutra says, the class of renunciates has limitless virtues, therefore the bodhisattvas who preserve vows is superior to the one who is a householder. This being the case, the life of renunciate is praised for achieving the freedom that is liberation from cyclic existence. In addition, it is taught that it is the best life even for the accomplishment of omniscience by way of perfection of mantra vehicles. And so therefore, you should respect the vows of individual liberation, the root of the teaching. And so then next is the kind of path you cultivate. Halt. to halt cycling existence. There are three parts to this: the certainty of the enumeration of the three trainings, the determination of the order of the three trainings, and the nature of the three trainings. Train in the path, which is the threefold precious training. And so the certainty of the enumeration of the trainings, explained in three aspects: the stages of disciplining mind, their results, and the objects that they eliminate. So first of all, you should restrain your senses, which is the morality, practice of morality. The training, the three trainings, brings to completion all the tasks of yogis and yoginis as follows. The training in ethical discipline makes distracted mind undistracted. And so as you apply yourself to keep your morality more and more, and to keep it better and better, then the training of concentration develops. And so you have to keep in mind what you have studied, the instructions, without forgetting them, so that you show mindfulness and introspection, and therefore which averts all the distractions external and internal. And then mental balance is an unbalanced mind. The training in wisdom liberates all an unliberated mind. Of course, with regard to cultivate bodhicitta, it would be very helpful to have single-pointed concentration. So where this is indispensable, the single-pointed concentration is indispensable, is to develop and cultivate and develop this this special insight focused on the emptiness. So in order to have this special insight into emptiness, then you must have single-pointed concentrations. And therefore, it says the training in wisdom liberates an unliberated mind. The results of ethical discipline that have not degenerated are the two happy rebirths of the desire realm. The result of ethical discipline has degenerated that has degenerated its rebirth in the miserable realms. The result of training in the mind are two happy rebirths of higher deities, form and formless realms. The result of the training of wisdom is liberation. In brief, the result of the three trainings are two goals: high status and a certain goodness. Since the former is twofold, happy rebirth is higher in the higher deities realm, and happy rebirth in the lower there is desire realm. The trainings that accomplish the twofold and the objects that they eliminate are: the former teachers asserted that in relation to the objects they eliminate, the afflictions, the trainings are threefold, according to whether they eliminate afflictions by weakening them, suppressing their manifest forms, or eradicating their seeds. So these three points are related to the morality, concentration, and wisdom trainings, these higher trainings. The determination of the order of the three trainings, the order of the three trainings demonstrated in a passage from the sutra requested by Brahma, quoted in the levels of yogic deeds. Ethical discipline is a very steady route. Concentration is a delight in a serene state of mind. In wisdom, the views of noble beings and the views of the sinners are acquired and forsaken respectively. So among these, ethical discipline is the root, because the other two grow out of it. Concentration, the second of the three trainings, depends on ethical discipline and takes pleasure in putting the mind into meditative equipoise. Wisdom, the third of the three trainings, depends on meditative equipoise and forsakes the view of sinners while acquiring the view of noble beings in order to see reality exactly. And then the nature of the trainings is, as the sutra requested by Brahma states, ethical discipline has six branches. Concentration is the four blissful abodes. The four aspects of the four noble truths are always pure sublime wisdom. And so things are impermanent, and therefore they come about through causes and conditions. Now, with regard to our body and mind, which come from causes and conditions, the causes and conditions such as the ignorance, and therefore these are in the nature of suffering. So because they are in the nature of suffering, and therefore they are unclean and filthy, and also cannot be we should not feel possession of them. And therefore, because the self is dependent on such such aggregates, and therefore they is empty of self-sufficiently substantial self. And all the four philosophical schools is maybe as common to all for philosophical schools. And this is now the four aspects of these four truths. Our four aspects of each of the four truths are for the truth of suffering, impermanent, suffering, empty, and self. And so he's on this, making comment on that line. And for the truth of the origin, cause, origin, arising, and condition. And then for the truth of cessation, cessation means if something were absent of negativities right from the called intrinsically, naturally, then we don't have to talk about eliminating them. But here we are talking about using some agent to overcome these defilements that are within us. So what we actually put an end to is suffering and its cause, the origin of suffering, by developing the antidotes towards the origin, and which it increases, the origin of suffering also diminishes. And then what it brings about as a result is the cessation, true cessation, not temporary cessation that comes arbitrarily, but something which is lasting and ultimate. And therefore, you finally reach a point where you are out of all these obstacles to attain cessation, and the path is used to reach that. And for the truth of path, and then Rigpa here, therefore the term correctness is could also be sometimes rational. So here Lam or the path. Here you are not. We are not talking about aspirational aspects of mind like compassion, but a path which is rational, actually rational. So, of course, the aspirational aspects of the path may be based on reason, but by themselves they are not. But they have to depend on other reasons that we actually, through which we develop them. And as you become more and more acquainted with it, then you have an achievement, and then you attain deliverance. So these 16 aspects, the knowledge of the 16 aspects, constitute the training and wisdom which is common to all the four philosophical traditions. But because of the philosophical differences of the view of selflessness, and there is subtlety in actually understanding these subtle levels of impermanence and so forth. So because the Prasangikas do not assert any objectivity in things, accordingly they have a more subtler way of interpreting and understanding impermanence and so forth. And because of that, we can talk about the suffering in terms of subtle level of suffering from the point of view of the Prasangikas, and then also the origin of suffering. There is a subtle level of the origin, which is the grasping a true existence according to Prasangika. So, I were explaining here the path of the person of medium capacity alone, I would have to give a lengthy explanation of the three trainings. However, since this is not the case, I will explain the training in wisdom, insight, and the mind in the section on persons of great capacity, and will not elaborate at this point. Thus, I will briefly discuss the training in ethical discipline here. In the beginning, reflect repeatedly on the benefits of ethical discipline and develop enthusiasm for it from the depths of your heart, as the great final Nirvana Sutra says. Ethical discipline is the ladder to all virtues. It is their foundation, just as the earth is the foundation for plants and the like. Just as a master trader goes first among all traders, so ethical discipline goes first among all virtues. Like the hoisted banner of Indra, ethical discipline is the banner of the teaching. It cuts down all sins and eliminates the path to miserable realms. So these show that the ethical discipline is the foundation. Nagarjuna says, ethical discipline, like the ground supporting animate and inanimate worlds, it is said to be foundation of all good qualities. And the Tantra requested by Subahu also says, just as every harvest grows without fault, independent of the earth, so too do the highest virtue depend on ethical discipline and grow by being moistened with the water of compassion. You should reflect on the benefits of keeping ethical discipline in accordance with the above-cited passages. There are very grave consequences for you if you undertake an ethical discipline and then fail to keep it. The Sutra, beloved of monks, says that once you undertake a training, it will proceed in either an advantageous or disadvantageous direction. So in English, there is the term self-discipline. So the mere term discipline has some kind of a following, some kind of a order or command from an above authority, a higher authority. But when you use the term self-discipline, it's like when you are actually advised by your doctor not to take certain meals and also act in a certain ways. For example, for certain sickness, if you are told not to take too much greasy food, then you should also acknowledge that, I know that my body is not good for the grease is and oil is not good for my body, and therefore you would restrain taking it. So similarly, here, like following a doctor's advice, the self-discipline has nothing to do with somebody actually forcing you to do something. So with regard to the people who have actually going from householder's life to someone without household must actually practice voluntarily to keep your moral ethics, to keep your vows. So it's not about just feeling fear. So when you think about omniscience or nirvana, we feel like these are something we would voluntarily kind of seek to attain, and not something forced, being forced on us. So, of course, there are few instances when you practice the Dharma to actually feel fear of circumstances and so forth. But when it comes to when you see that there is that lasting happiness and peace of mind, then you you see you actually feel enthusiastic about pursuing it. And therefore, you would voluntarily and happily pursue that path, the path leading to that. So all the other religions, traditions, of course, are very helpful to their followers. But it seems sometimes it would seem like they are actually forced, like people, that if you don't follow the command or the will of God, you will suffer this and that. So it's almost like urging the disciples to follow these religions out of fear of God. But if you are able to voluntarily follow a path, then nobody has to force that on you, and you will be able to do that on your own and without fear. So I also sometimes see that the teachings pertaining to the beings of smallest capacity are without having the understanding of cessation, the true cessation, well, correctly, then these teachings would rather seem to actually bring fear in the practitioners. But when it comes to when you are able to see the points, having understood the true cessation, then this makes sense to engage in the practices leading to higher rebirth and so forth. Makes sense, and that is true also with that of with those of seeking or pursuing liberation and omniscience. So the Buddha has said, after my passing away, this will be your teacher. And so he instructs the monks to take the Pratimoksha Sutra itself as their, the representative of the Buddha himself. So the Buddha said that at the time around when he was about to pass away, and so the monks, the community of monks, must earnestly read this Vinaya Pratimoksha Sutra. So page 344, those who fail to make an effort in this way, who follow the rules in a lax fashion, thinking that even though they have transgressed, it is merely small fault, will gain only suffering. For the exercises of discipline says these lines. And therefore, strive not to be polluted by faults. And so there are, of course, certain disciplines and vows laid down by the Buddha, and which are mere prescriptive ones. But Buddha was not actually forcing this on the monks, because after having gone against certain, after having made some mistake in their dealing with people, lay people, then and receiving criticism from them, then the Buddha had to lay down such vows. And so there is always a reason for laying down these vows. And then there are times when the Buddha actually gave more leniency in regarding certain vows by seeing the pros, which should be checked by seeing the pros and cons and circumstantially. And therefore strive not to be polluted by faults and infractions. However, if you should become polluted by these, do not heedlessly ignore such sins and infractions, but strive to redress them in accordance with the Buddha's teachings. And the sutra requested by the Brahma says, rely upon the trainings, undertake them earnestly from the heart, do not give them up later or break them even to save your life. Always maintain them diligently and engage in the discipline. Moreover, the Buddha's, as the Buddha decreed in the sutra on having pure ethical discipline, using reasons, you should keep your ethical discipline even at the risk of your life. And you should think, if this need to keep ethical, my ethical discipline at all costs were at all costs were not the case, then shaving off my hair and donning monastic robes are pointless. So one time I met one Westerner. He was he actually had a shaven head, and he told I said you are like a monk, and with shaven head, and he said I cannot help but shave my head because I'm actually becoming bald. So some people who are bald, who are becoming bald in the center of their head, actually, and have hair on the side of their head, they actually try to cover the baldness with their hair. And when there is a strong storm, this hair, their hair would be blown away from the bald space. So sometimes I even think like that for about these bald people who try to cover up the baldness with the some hair they have, that there would be some storm. So of course, if something really bad happens, it's not good, but these are very minor things. And there's some... So when the things are very formal in some congregation, and if there's something wrong happening, then it would be also very good for everyone to see, have the fun. King of Concentration Sutra says, after you have renounced the world and gone forth into the Buddha's teaching, you engage in sinful actions and attached to mounts, oxen, and the chariot, have the idea that wealth and grain are essential. Why did you, who make no effort to train in anything, bother to shave your hands? You who seek to escape from cycling existence, the composite, and to reach the city of liberation will not succeed if the feet of your ethical discipline are unsteady. Not only that, you will return again to cycling existence and be destroyed by suffering. The Buddha spoke of this with an example in the King of Concentration Sutra. When a man was attacked by a gang of robbers, he tried to escape because he wished to live. But when he set out, his feet could not move or run, and so the robbers caught and subdued him. Likewise, a confused person whose ethical discipline is impaired, though wanting to escape from the composite, cannot escape because of the impaired ethical discipline and is destroyed by illness, old age, and death. Therefore, as the sutra says, I set forth trainings for householders wearing secular clothing. At that time, these monks did not have even these trainings. The Buddha says that in these times, when even monks do not completely maintain the five fundamental trainings he taught to lay practitioners, effort in the trainings has an even greater effort fruit. Therefore, you should strive to maintain the trainings. The same sutra says, for 10 million eons, as many as there are sands in the Ganges, I served with pure mind, food and drink, umbrellas, banners and processions of lamps to 10 quadrillion Buddhas. So much greater is the merit of whoever practices a single training night and day at a time when the sublime teaching is perishing and the Sugata's teaching is coming to an end. So furthermore, you might think that even were you to incur an infraction, you could confess it afterwards. However, in this case, you lack an attitude of restraint that prevents you from committing the action again. So engaging in this infraction is like eating poison and telling yourself that you could always take the antidote later. 4, the lion's roar of Maitreya Sutra states, Maitreya, in the future, in the final 500-year period of teaching, certain renunciates and also the bodhisattvas will claim that sinful karma is completely extinguished through confessing the faults. They will disclose infractions, saying, after we have become involved in sin, we will confess it, but they will not restrain themselves from doing it again. I tell you that they possess fatal karma. What do I mean by fatal? For example, it is like people who ingest poison. They create this time of death and then end up in a misguided descent into a miserable realm. And also, Maitreya, what I call poison in the noble teaching of the discipline is transgressing the fundamental trainings as I have prescribed them. Therefore, do not eat such poisons. Given that maintaining vow in such a way applies to one who has taken the vow's individual liberation, it is also similar for one who practices the mantra vehicle. For the tantra requested by Subahu states that even the householder practitioners of mantra must act in accordance with the text on discipline, except for the matters concerning the marks, ropes of renunciates and the ceremonial activities and some factors which are merely regulatory of the entire discipline that I, the conqueror, taught. The pure ethical discipline of individual liberation, a householder practitioner of mantra should set aside the science of rituals and practice the rest. And the Kamlungpa said, page 347, so not thinking about karma and its effect will not achieve pure ethical discipline. Therefore, thinking about this is a personal imperative. And Sharava also says, in general, whatever good or ill happens to you depends on religion. Moreover, within religion, if you depend on what the texts on discipline say, you will not even have to repeat things. You will be confidently pure, consistent, sure, and steadfast. Geshe Drumtenba said, and then the quotation from Master Atisha. Further, with regard to keeping a pure ethical discipline, in this way, Nusuba said, right now, so you should know what afflictive emotions are. And Nusuba says, therefore, as I explained before, once you have identified the afflictions, reflect on their faults and on the benefits of separating from them and planted the spice of mindfulness and vigilance, you must repeatedly fend off whatever affliction raises its head. Further, you must see any affliction as an enemy and attack it as soon as it arises in your mind. Otherwise, if you acquiesce when it first appears and then nurture it with improper thoughts, you will have no way to defeat it and it will conquer you in the end. Even if you fail to arrest the afflictions through such efforts, you must not allow them to linger but must immediately disperse them as though they were drawing in water, drawings in water. Do not let them be like drawings in stone. But with regard to religious matters, you should do the opposite. As Nagarjuna's friendly letter says, know that the mind can be like a drawing made in water, in earth, or in stone. When afflictions arise, it is best to have the first. But when aspiring to religion, the last is best. This is said in engaging the bodhisattva deeds as well. We should be obsessed with these. We should be obsessed with these afflictions. Resent them. We do battle. While making an exception for only those afflictions that are destroyers of other afflictions, better that I be burnt and killed, or that my head be cut off, than that I should ever bow before my enemies, the afflictions. Then the engaging in bodhisattva deed says, on page 349, ordinary enemies expelled from a country So with regards to the second phrase, verse in this, the eye of wisdom eradicates the various afflictions. Once clear from the mind, what can they, where can they go? So the in the line, the eye of wisdom eradicates various afflictions. The Tibetan term, in the Tibetan, the translation is nyomong nyomong two times, which is to mean that both in a way seems to indicate afflictions. But the one refers actually to the afflictions being very feeble in nature, that they can be eradicated with when once you develop the eye of wisdom. Gishe Langri Thangpa said, even changing the place where you sit or merely turning your head will make the afflictions disappear. It is said that he struggled with his afflictions. Such disappearance of the afflictions, as Langri Thangpa describes, occurs when you do, as Gumbawa said, what is there to do except to stand guard over your mind and day and night. Furthermore, no matter how many times the great elder met someone in a day, he would always ask, meanwhile, have you had a good mind? The way to eliminate afflictions is as follows, beginning with the six root afflictions. Among the great misdeeds, ignorance is the most tenacious and serves as the basis for all the other afflictions. Therefore, as a remedy for ignorance, you should meditate a great deal on dependent arising and become knowledgeable about the progression and cessation of cyclic existence. So as I have been saying, first think about the causal dependency of things, how causes and conditions to bring about their causes, and then on the basis of that understanding, you can develop the understanding of dependent origination in terms of how things are designated and overcome the root of all samsara and the rest of the afflictive emotions. And if you have habitually cultivated this, none of the bad views, such as the five afflicted views, will occur. Hostility is the enemy who brings suffering, both in this and in the future lives, and so who destroys the accumulated good roots of virtue. As engaging in Bodhisattva says, there is no sin like hatred. Therefore, never give hostility an opportunity and make every effort to be patient. If hostility does not arise, you will be very happy. And even in this life, engaging in Bodhisattva says, those who persistently defeat anger will be happy in this and other lives. So therefore you should meditate a great deal on what is externally or internally unpleasant and on the faults of being attached to desirable objects and thereby overcome your craving and attachments. The great master Vasubandhu says, the five beings, deer, elephant, butterflies, fish and bees are overcome by five desirable objects. So strive to remedy this and stop these eight worldly concerns by meditating on the faults of cyclic existence in general and by cultivating mindfulness of death in particular. Eliminate pride, as it is the chief obstacle to development of the path in this lifetime and causes future rebirth as a servant and so on. The way to do this is as stated in the friendly letter. If you reflect again and again, just as I have not transcended illness, aging, death, and the loss of pleasant, so my karma and its results are my own doings. You will overcome arrogance because you will be applying its remedy. So as said in the eight verses of turning the mind, wherever you accompany someone anywhere, and I will look upon myself as the lowest. So if you can think well along these lines, of course, there's all reason, but animals cannot actually see such things. As Lama Tsongkhapa said, that he is not surprised with those who do not accept dependent origination. for rejecting emptiness, but those who actually accept dependent origination and reject emptiness actually surprises him. So we who actually seek liberation, but if we, it would be really a disgrace if we were to give ourselves in to the afflictive emotions. Once you have achieved certainty about the truth, the three jewels and the karma and its effects, the afflictions of doubt will not arise. So in order to have certainty in these, you should at least study texts like this, great treatise to the on the stages of the path to enlightenment. And if possible, you should also study the classic texts written by the great Nalanda masters, which will open your eyes of wisdom, and which are very important to study. The secondary afflictions, those called sleep, lethargy, excitement, dizziness, carelessness, shamelessness, lack of embarrassment, forgetfulness, and lack of vigilance, are quick to occur and hinder your cultivation in the various virtuous group of phenomena. You should undertake their faults and get used to reducing their strength through an immediate application of their remedies. With respect to their faults, the friendly letter says, excitement and regret, malice, lethargy and sleep, longing for the desirable, and doubt, understand that these five obscurations are robbers who steal the riches of virtue. Also, the exhortation of wholehearted resolve discusses the faults at length. Phlegm, wind, and bile occur to a great extent in the bodies of those who take pleasure in sleep and lethargy. Their constituents are in disorder. For those who take pleasure in lethargy and sleep, their stomachs are unclean because of poor food, their bodies are heavy, and their complexions unhealthy. Even their words are unclear. And those who take pleasure in lethargy and sleep are confused in their aspirations towards religion fade. These children lose all of their good qualities, their virtues degenerate, and they fall into darkness. The mindfulness of the excellent teaching says the one foundation of all the afflictions is laziness. Those who have it, those who have a single moment of laziness, will have no practice at all. The collection of indicative verses says those involved in carelessness are childish people who ruin their minds. As masters master traders guard their wealth, so should the wise take care. The Garland of Birth Stories also says this. And then the friendly letter says, Lord, mindfulness of that within the sphere of the body, speech, and mind is taught to be the one path by which the Sugatas traveled. Apply yourself to this and maintain it well. All virtues will disintegrate with the deterioration of mindfulness. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds says, even the faithful, the learned, and those who undertake joyous perseverance will be polluted by infractions through the fault of lack of vigilance. Thus, even if you cannot arrest the afflictions or the secondary afflictions, it is indispensable to see them as enemies right now without strengthening them or taking their side. Hence, side with the remedies and strive to overcome the afflictions. After you have accomplished this, completely purify whatever ethical discipline you have assumed. As the glorious Gombawa, the disciple of the great elder, said to Nisurba, Yeshiba, if tomorrow or the next day someone were to ask you all your disciples, what are you practicing as the core of your personal instructions? They would answer that it was to attain super knowledge or vision of their chosen deities. However, they should answer, it is becoming more and more definite about the cause and effect of the karma, and consequently keeping purely whatever vows I have assumed. Therefore, you should understand this to indicate that phrase attainment, which result from meditation, refers to achievement of the reduction of afflictions such as ignorance. When people fight others, something that yields only sins and suffering both in this and in other lives, they endure all manner of suffering for however long it takes, even at the cost of their lives. Then they show off scars of their wounds, etc., and boast, I received this one at that time. This being the case, it is even more appropriate for So this concludes the explanation of the stages of the path shared with persons of medium capacity. Let's move switch to middle length lamrim. The measure of attitudes having been developed. So this has two parts, indicating the measure of the attitude having arisen purely. So when you have come to understand page 124, when you have come to understand the characteristic of characteristics of psychedelics in detail from the one point of view of the two sufferings in the origin, such as the desire to abandon and abandon them, and the desire that arises to attain the complete pacification is indeed the thought to definitely emerge. However, let alone that alone is not sufficient. Therefore, you should generate that mind to the same extent as the mind of someone who does not want to be stuck in a house ablaze with fire or stay locked up in a prison, and to the same extent that it desires liberation for them, then it will still be necessary to increase it. If this thought, as taught by Sharavai, is no more than mediocre, like flour thrown into sour milk, also the view that does not want the causes of cyclic existence, the origins, will not become more than that. Accordingly, one striving for liberation, the decision that is the ceasing of sufferings and origins, will be the same. Because of that, the desire to accomplish the path of liberation will be mere words, and also there will be no basis for the compassion that cannot bear the suffering of other sentient beings who wander in cyclic existence, since the uncontrived mind of unsurpassed enlightenment that has the power to arouse the mind will not arise. You become a Mahayanist only in your understanding that follows words. For that reason, you should cultivate that thought again and again, eliminating conceptions about it. You may think, if you cultivate extreme revulsion and disenchantment with cyclic existence, you will fall into the extreme of peace, like the hearers, because of your dislike for re-entering cyclic existence. Therefore, it is becoming for Hinayanis to cultivate in disenchantment, but it is inappropriate for bodhisattvas. That is how it is explained in the Sutra of the showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret. This has for elimination of conceptions. As to four parts, the meaning of statements in scriptures that bodhisattvas are not terrified by cyclic existence, how it is necessary to enjoy being reborn in cyclic existence due to compassion, but to be terrified of rebirth in cyclic existence due to karma and the afflictions, and for those with vows to engage who express themselves in this manner without differentiating between rebirth due to karma and mental afflictions and rebirths due to aspiration, prayers, and so forth, infractions occur, and then cherishing the way to conduct without falling into the extreme of peace despite great revulsion for cyclic existence. Then explanation of how the nature of the path leading to liberation is established, establishment of nature of the path leading to liberation, and by what kind of basis is cyclic existence averted. So monastic life is the best basis for practicing the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
and then cultivating what kind of path is cycling existence averted. By cultivating what kind of path is cycling existence averted, this has 3 points: identification of the path, the transition indication that the other trainings will be explained further on, and in particular how to train in the ethics, and the friendly letters is these lines. Even if your hat and clothes caught fire, give up preventing it. Simply make an effort to destroy the occurrence of future rebirths. There is nothing else that would be better. Through pure discipline, wisdom, and concentration, attain the the immaculate state of peace and taming. Nirvana, that's ageless, deathless, and limitless, free of earth, water, fire, wind, sun, and moon. You need to practice the 3 types of precious trainings of the path as set forth in this statement. Indication that other trainings will be explained further on. If I were commenting on the path of intermediate state beings for my own enjoyment and extensive commentary, on the 3 trainings would be necessary. However, not doing this here. Therefore, here I will only briefly state the way to train in ethics. In particular, how to train in ethics. The benefits of guarding ethics has 4 parts. The benefits of guarding ethics, the shortcoming of not guarding ethics, how the benefits of generating ethics are great these days, and the manner of training in ethics. In this regard, you should initially consider the benefits of ethics again and again and increase your heartfelt enthusiasm for it. And in the Tantra request by Subahu, it says, just as crop grows waters independent of the ground, depending on ethics, moistened by the water of compassion, the most superior wholesome qualities grow. You should think about it according to these statements. And then the shortcomings of not guarding ethics, just as guarding the ethics you have adopted brings enormous benefits, likewise there are great disadvantages to not guarding that. You should consider the shortcomings of not guarding it again and again as taught in the scriptures. Ethics is happiness for some. A sutra on the cherishing monks, it says, ethics is happiness for some. For others, ethics is suffering. For those who have it, it is happiness. For those who breach it, it is suffering. In the root tantra of Manjushri, it says, if discipline declines in those who recite, there will be no higher attainments, nor will there be middling attainments. Even the least ones will remain absent. The king of sages did not teach mantra attainments for those who lose discipline, nor is that the place of direction to go to the city of nirvana. How could there be in such bad children any attainments of mantra at all? For those who disregard ethics, how could there be happy realms if they do not become higher beings, nor beings bound now for highest bliss? What need to mention their accomplishing the mantras that the victors taught? How there are great benefits of generating ethics nowadays. The King of Meditative Concentration Sutra says, the trainings that I taught to those who wear the lady gray apparel, even monks who are fully ordained will not have those trainings at that time. And then the instructions on the 4 antidotes for abandoning downfalls. Among the 4 causes of occurrence of downfalls, the antidote to not knowing is to study the trainings and know them. The antidote to non-consciousness is a mindfulness that does not forget the observable objects and aspect of what to adopt and what to abandon. Introspection that individually investigates the three doors at every moment and brings to mind the heavy mind, the good and faulty actions you engage in, the shame that shuns faults from the perspective of oneself of the Dharma, the embarrassment that shuns faults thinking that others will criticize you, and the intimidation that fears the fully ripened effects of faulty conducts. You should train in these and others. And as an antidote to the lack of respect, you should be respectful toward the teacher, his formulated rules, and the those who perfectly observe them. And so, with this, that concludes the explanation of the training in the mind, training the mind in stages of paths common to the intermediate beings. Next, so the stage is the path to for persons of great capacity. Respectfully, I bow down at the feet of those excellent and revered persons who have great compassion. After such extended meditation on the faults of cyclic existence from various perspectives, you will see all of cyclic existence as a pit of blazing fire. Then you will be completely consumed with the desire to attain liberation, the elimination of suffering and afflictions. If you learn the path of the three precious trainings, you will attain liberation, which is free of cyclic existence and is indeed irreversible, unlike the glory of high status within cyclic existence. However, your elimination of false attainment of good qualities will be incomplete. Thus, you will not have accomplished your own aims and can only accomplish the purposes of others in a limited way. Eventually, a Buddha will exhort you, and you will have to enter the Mahayana path. Because of this, intelligent person should enter the Mahayana path from the beginning. As Aryasura, companion of the perfection, says, once you have abandoned forever the two lower vehicles, which possess no power to provide the welfare of the world, before you will enter the vehicle which the conqueror Shakyamuni's compassionate compassionately taught, this consists only of helping others. And also, so letter to a student says, page 14 of book 2, domestic animals eat a mouthful of easily found grass, and when tormented by great thirst, they happily drink water they find. Here, those who make an effort at working for the welfare of others do so out of charisma, joy, and surpassing length. Strength, the sun's great rays shine everywhere, traveling like a horse drawn chariot. The ground supports the world without calculating the burden. Such is the nature of persons of great capacity who lack any self-interest. They are consumed with whatever brings happiness and benefit to the world. One who sees beings tormented by the above-mentioned suffering and who hastens to act for their welfare is called a person of great capacity and an adept. The same text says, those thus end the Mayana after you have developed great respect for it induced by seeing its good qualities from various perspectives. Therefore, page 15, after the quotations, therefore the Mahayana is the origin of all good qualities, all the good of self and others. So nobody actually criticizes saying that compassion and altruism are bad. So even animals appreciate if you actually show love and care to them. So if you could also have compassion towards others and think of helping them, serving them, benefiting them, then this mind that we have, if it could be used to cultivate such altruism, then it's really worthy. And so, as it is said, the Mayana is the origin of all the goods of self and others, the medicine that alleviates all troubles and so forth. So it will actually bring about omniscience, and you'll be able to accumulate and complete the accumulation of merit and wisdom. So as Bodhisattva Charyavatara says, the Bodhicitta is the great path of the is the principal path of the Mahayana, and so forth. Now, it's only wishes to read the part Lamrim, the condensed Lamrim. Dimare. As the Lamrim, Jerembuchi says in the condensed Lamrim, Bodhicitta is the central pillar of the Supreme Vehicle, and so his Holiness wishes to read through this text. A song of experience, condensed points of the stages of the path. In this, this is also contained in the essence of superfine gold. I bow down my hat to the chief of the Shakyas. And so, the crowning jewel of the learned ones of the world, of course, Nagarjuna and Asanga. In those days, when this was written, it was India was not actually known to the rest of the world. That, but today, India is known to all the whole world, and therefore, we could say the crowning jewel of the learned one of the world, whose banner. So it makes one realize. So the stages of the path to enlightenment. As it fulfills every aspiration of sentient beings, it is the king of wish-fulfilling gems of instructions. So this is true about Master Tsongkhapa's Lamrim Chemo. But some Lamrims do not have this detailed explanation of the difficult points of practice, but they give the visualizations. So the writings of Lama Tsongkhapa has this unique quality of actually going through the points, and then when there are difficult points to be resolved, he actually uses resort to reason and then explicates them further in great detail. So this is unique to him. Whereas Bodhin Rinpoche, of course, was a great scholar who has actually written great many texts. And I read one a commentary on one text by Nagarjuna by Bodhin Rinpoche. And I found that when it came to very difficult points, then Bodhin Rinpoche didn't have much comment on them. Just summarizes and gives a short explanation. But as opposed to that, Lama Tsongkhapa, when he comes across very difficult points, then he would actually explicate them.
Yeah.
So this Lamrim Chemo is the wishful gem of instructions. As it combines the thousand streams of noble teachings, it is also the ocean of glorious, excellent explanations. It makes one realize the entire teaching and is consistent. It makes one see the entire teaching as spiritual instruction. It makes one discover the intent of the Buddha with ease, and it also saves one from the abyss of grave misdeeds. So this verse, which ends with the learned one in India, and so as the essence of the entire scripture is herein condensed, even listening to, and so that up to that point was relying on the guru, and then next is actually taking taking the advantage of making this life meaningful. And then thinking about the particular causes and effects is taught from this verse, where it begins with the line, until you obtain a fully qualified rebirth, no breakthrough in the practice of the extraordinary path will occur, and so forth. And then the purification of your negative karmas. Especially, it is essential to purify the karmic obscurations of non-virtue and infractions that pollute the... And then cultivating the paths of the beings of small capacity and the paths of intermediate being. If you make no effort to ponder the faults of true suffering, a genuine wish for liberation will not arise. Mainly here you think about the suffering of samsara. As long as you remain in samsara with this contaminated body and mind, which is a result of one's delusion and karma, you will not be liberated. And so you should see this condition in samsara, and you should cultivate, develop this wish to go out of and therefore look into the cause of this samsara, and therefore genuine wish to liberation will not arise. If you do not contemplate how the origin of suffering leads to samsara, you will not know how to eliminate the root of samsara. Hence, it is essential to cultivate renunciation of samsara and recognize what binds you in samsara. I, a yogi, practice in this way. You who seek liberation should do likewise. So with regard to this short Lamrim, I have received the teaching on it from Tata Rinpoche. I don't remember it clearly, but I can decisively say that I have. I have received it from Ling Rinpoche, Tijan Rinpoche, and Jajan Rinpoche. So all from all three of these masters, I have received teachings on it. So therefore, the Mayan is the origin of all the good of self and others, the medicine that alleviates. And so nourishment for all beings who see, hear, remember, and come into contact with it. And so, why somebody becomes a Buddha is because of bodhicitta. So the qualities, the positive qualities of the bodhisattvas on the 10 grounds, such as the 10 great qualities developed at the, when one reaches the path of seeing and so forth, does not come only from these qualities do not come only from by developing or having the insight and experience of emptiness, but for this to become ultimate bodhicitta, for the realization of emptiness, direct realization of emptiness to become ultimate bodhicitta, it must be complemented by bodhicitta, the conventional bodhicitta, which is the aspiration to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. So Chandrakirti also says that the understanding of emptiness, compassion, and that wish to become a Buddha are the cause of a bodhisattva. So while you remain in samsara, if you have a very altruistic mind, warm heart, and abstaining from killing, stealing, raping, or rape, and also telling lie, using harsh language, and so forth, thinking that it's not good to harm others, and it's very powerful. If you just think that, oh, by doing these negative actions, you will be harmed, then it's rather more selfish. Also, although both in both cases you are restraining killing and so forth, there is a difference in the result. So through the practice of restraining or the killing and so forth, you actually create causes of higher rebirth, and then saving lives of others and so forth, but you will also create the same cause. And so all these excellences in life, in samsara, come from doing good to others. Shantideva says, if one does not equate and equalize and exchange self with others, then you will not. It's not only that you will not reach Buddhahood, but even in samsara, there will be, you will not have peace, happiness. So today in the world, we can see that people who are more, very knowledgeable, but then they are very deceptive and dishonest, trying to deceive others, bully others, then nobody will like them. It doesn't help. So even if you may not be very knowledgeable and educated and so forth, but if you have a good heart, warm heart, then people, even animals, will appreciate you. So, and that which has the great skill in means that engages in you, in others' welfare, and that engages you in others' welfare and thereby indirectly achieves your own welfare in its entirety. So sometimes we have this notion that if you be good to others, actually it doesn't help you much. If you are good, if you have a good warm heart, it actually maybe help others and not you. But if you actually, what we do actually is not value warm-heartedness and thought of that benefits others, but we actually value, sometimes consider those who are more selfish and very irritative to be and try to avoid them. And so we have to know the difference. If you actually cultivate altruism, who is the first beneficiary? The person himself or herself who cultivates this. So whether it helps others or not is dependent on their attitude. It depends on circumstances. So without think about others, if you could actually, regardless whether it actually brings help to oneself or others or not, if you have a good heart, warm heart, then you will be the first beneficiary. If you are honest, if you are altruistic, thinking of to help others, you'll be honest. You will not bully others. You will not despise or look down on others. You will not bully them, and you will be very. You won't be. You won't do things like double dealing, and therefore you will not be anxious. You could be, you can be transparent. With that, people will trust you. And this trust is the source of friendship. Without trust, how can you have friends? How can you be friends? Friends of money are not real friends. When people actually flatter people with power or wealth, then, of course, that's not a genuine friend. Because once the rich people lose their money or the authorities lose their power, then they will lose their friends. So when sometimes it happens that people gain more friends when they make more wealth, once this wealth is gone, they also lose these friends. And compared to that, then the animals are much better because they do not actually look for your wealth or anything like that, because they only value and appreciate your sincerity to them. So we as human beings sometimes think that, oh, what's the use if I be friend with that person? What do I gain? If I don't gain anything, I will not. It doesn't make sense to be friend with them. So that's not good. That's not sincere friend. And so with altruism, you are more, you are happier in mind, and because of that, you have better health. So although you think of others as it's said here, and that which has a skill in means that engages in you, that engages you in others' welfare and thereby indirectly achieves your own welfare in its entirety, is a great statement. So this is something which is taught by the Buddha, Nagarjuna, Master Asanga, and also Master Atisha, and also these great masters, including Jerembuche, have practiced and cultivated bodhicitta. And of course, there may be differences in their philosophical views. So they have great qualities. They don't lack in the good qualities. It's because of this bodhicitta. And so one who enters it thinks, wonderful, I have found what I'm looking for. Enter the supreme vehicle with all the strength of an excellent person that you have. The compendium of the perfection states, this supreme vehicle is realized by genuine wisdom. From it, the omniscience of the great sage arises. He is like the eye of the world. He is radiance like the rays of the rising sun. Thus enter the Mayana after you have developed great respect for it, induced by seeing its good qualities from various perspectives. The training, next training in the mind, in training the mind in stages of the path of, for persons of great capacity. So perhaps I should stop here. Through meditating in this manner on page 131, through meditating in this manner on the disadvantages of cycling existence from different perspectives over a long time, you will see all existence as a pit of blazing fire, and your mind will be thoroughly overcome by the wish to attain liberation that completely pacifies suffering. If, due to that, you train in the three trainings, you will attain liberation from cycling existence, and moreover, you will not indeed turn back again when even to look at the glory of high status. Nonetheless, since extinguishing one's own faults and achieving positive qualities is limited, your own welfare will not be complete. For that reason, the welfare of others will also be temporarily neglected, and in the end, having been urged to do so by the Buddhas, you will have to enter the Mahayana. Therefore, it is appropriate for the intelligent to enter the Mahayana from the start. In the compendium of the perfection, it says, having abandoned forever those two vehicles which are without power to bring about all the world's aims, those whose nature tastes of benefiting others, enter the victor's vehicle teaching compassion. It is the happiness and magnificence of great beings and the capacity of great beings. It is appropriate to take responsibility for the welfare of others, because to observe only one's own welfare is something we also share with animals. Therefore, the natural disposition of great beings is to categorically strive for the benefit and happiness of the others. Those who see how migrating beings everywhere are tormented by suffering and who toil for their welfare are called great beings or the wise. In the same text it says, those who have seen migrators confused by dense gray clouds of world ignorance as they fall without control into the blazing fire of suffering, and who mentally toil and exert themselves for them as if blazing fire was spreading overhead, now they are great beings. They also are the wise. There exists an entrance to the Mahayana, the source of all your own and others' excellence, the medicine removing all problems, the great path traveled by all wise beings that nurtures and nourishes all beings through seeing, hearing, remembering, and touching, that possesses the great skillful means by working for the welfare of others, by the way you accomplish your own welfare without any incompleteness. Thinking, oh, I have found exactly what I was looking for, you should engage in this best of the vehicles with whatever ability of a great being you have. So let's stop here. This ground anointed by perfume strewn with grit. Strewn with flowers, Mount Meru, for goddess, sun and moon, I imagine it's with the fountain. Offer you, may all beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam and Rukam Niyatayami. By accumulating through a long effort the two collections as vast as the sky, may I become the chief of conquerors to guide all sentient beings whose feeble minds are blinded by ignorance. Also, in all lives until I reach that point, may Manjugosha kindly look after me after that, after I find the supreme path complete in the stages of the teaching by accomplishing it. May I please the conquerors by skill in means, inspired by strong loving-kindness, may the vital points of the path that I precisely know clear away the mental darkness of beings. May I then uphold the conqueror's teachings for a long time in regions where supreme precious teaching has not spread, or where it has spread but then declined. May I illumine them. Illumine that treasure of happiness and benefits within the mind, deeply moved by great compassion. May this treatise on the stages of the path of enlightenment, well founded on the wondrous deeds of the conquerors and their children, bring glory to the minds of those who want to be free and long preserve the conqueror's achievement, as for all who provide conditions that support integration of the good path and clear away conditions that inhibit that integration, whether they are humans or not. May they never be separated in all their lifetimes from the pure authentic path praised by the conquerors. When I strive to properly achieve the supreme vehicle through the 10 deeds of the teaching, may I become accompanied always by those who have power, and may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions. Then,